This regular meeting of the City of Analaska is called to order at 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 13, 2024. Councilmember Belk, can you please read the mission statement?
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Tungle.
Yeah.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Longo?
Here.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
Mr. Tudikoff?
We have a quorum. All council member, 5 present and 1 on Zoom. And Mayor Tutyakov is excused. He's got a meeting until 7:30 at the AML in Kodiak. Can you please join us in Pledge of Allegiance, Mr. Nicholson?
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is the recognition of visitors. City Manager, introduce.
Well, I know we have a bunch of folks from the clinic here, and I see several other community members, but I don't have any particular recognitions to make. Thanks.
Thank you, and welcome, people from the clinic, and everybody present. Next is the adoption of agenda. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda?
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Longo. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. Next is approved minutes of previous meeting. May I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the July 23rd, 2024?
Move to approve minutes of July
23rd,
2024. Second. Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Longo. Bell. Without any objection, the proposed minutes are approved. Next is reports from the city manager.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Tungle. So the written report's in your packet, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions. But first, I'd like to acknowledge our police department. They received an award from our online training platform that's called Lexipol, an award they've never received before. And even though our police department is short-staffed and working substantial overtime, our officers are still completing valuable online training, which enhances their knowledge and skills and abilities. So we got this award from Lexipol, and I just want to acknowledge the police department and their fine time training. And if you have any questions about the manager's report, I'm here to respond.
The packet, it's been sent to you. Any question or anything on Coleman?
So, see, the dredging project is moving forward. I just know that one of the items for our capital projects was to possibly piggyback on with that contractor for UMC. I was wondering what the status of that is.
Well, I know it's been since the Coast Guard, Corps of Engineers dredging has been delayed until spring of 25. We will also delay our projects to dredge in front of the UMC and the light cargo dock to be time concurrent with them.
Have we made arrangements? I mean, is Is this contractor going to?
We haven't yet issued an RFP, I don't believe. Peggy McLaughlin's here. She can give us a short update, please. Thanks, Peggy.
So we're on time with that project. We did a bunch of the geotech work. We're having to go back and do some of that because of the weather conditions precluded them from getting some of the bathymetry that they needed and some of the detail of the geotech. But P&D has started the permitting process, which is the long lead time for that. So we should be in a good position to bid that with timing of the other contractor coming out to do the dredging of the interest shell.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question?
Vice Mayor, I have a something.
Councilmember Luby, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to the staff for the warm welcome that they gave RDC last week when they were here. I had an opportunity to chat with some of them, and they said that they had received the a really warm welcome here that they've never received from anywhere else that they've traveled. So I just want to say thank you again for that, and I appreciate that. So that was it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Luby. I did too spend some time with a group, and they I got a few emails that saying how much this community, they appreciate how much they've been welcome, and people are so nice. And they said they don't mind coming back again, spend some time in our community. So that's a plus. And they're, I think they have a lot of connection where we can use them, I think, in the future with the enterprise and with openings that we got. So they'll be well connected, and hopefully we work with them in the future. Any other question? Hearing none, we'll go to the second one, the Board of Commission Minutes, or Planning Commission Minutes, January 18, 2024, and April 18, 2024. And this is... there's no presentation, and this was sent in your packet. So if you got any question, no question. Hearing none, we'll move to the community input and announcement. This is the time for a member for the public to provide information to council or to make announcement of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes and will not engage in dialogue.
Hello, Mayor Pro Tem Council. Thank you very much. Couple things. The first thing is that this Saturday, if the weather holds and we can do it, we're going to have the Heart of the Aleutian Festival. Starts at noon and goes till 6. We're going to check the weather and make sure that everything's good. So if the weather's really bad, we may do something else. The next item is that a week from Saturday will be the Bunker Hill challenge, where 13 times up and down you've run a whole marathon. So I think there's been 5 people that have made it all the way through. One of those people are audience tonight, Cameron Dean. He made it up and down. He said he'd never do that again, but but he did do it, and it's fun. So come on out and have a good time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Roger.
Good evening. Virginia Hatfield, Museum of the Aleutians. The museum will have a cruise ship on the 16th and the 18th, and if anybody wants to volunteer to help us, we always appreciate the help. It should be a pretty fun time. We're going to have 2 on the 16th. On the 17th, we're going to be out at Heart of the Aleutians, so we will be closed that day. And come look for us at the Heart of the Aleutians. We'll have a table. We're going to have some science activities relating to our Bering Sea Storms exhibit. And we'll have a few items for sale. And then August 24th, we will have a hands-on the museum event, where we're going to bring some items out of collections, and I'll be there to answer questions about them. So we'll probably pick some from some archaeological sites, but we'll take requests if people have anything they want to see. And then I wanted to also mention our fundraiser. We've set the date for our membership drive and fundraising auction. That will be November 2nd. So set that date in your calendar. I'll be at the Margaret Bay Cafe again on November 2nd at 6 p.m.
Thank you.
Hi, Ellen Crane. I'm speaking on behalf of the Illilouk Family and Health Services Board of Directors, and I am here to announce a leadership transition. The IFHS board terminated our contract with Noel Ray, Chief Executive Officer, effective July 3rd, 2024. We are very pleased to announce that we have promoted Don Johnson, who is our former Director of Clinical Services, to the position of Chief Operating Officer. And she is also currently serving as our interim Chief Executive Officer of IFHS during this transition period. Don brings a wealth of experience, including over 20 years in the healthcare field and a deep commitment to IFHS that has been demonstrated over and over again over the last year and a half. We are confident in her ability to maintain the quality of care that our patients expect and deserve. We also experienced some recent board turnover, but I am excited to let you know that we were able to fill two board seats very quickly. Our newest board members, Ronan Gray, who is a local contractor, and Luis Sevilla, who works for Matson, bring much needed skills and expertise to our board, especially as we progress with our clinic expansion project. Moving forward, the IFHS Board of Directors has outlined three priorities. The first is uninterrupted healthcare and emergency medical services. Our top priority has always been and continues to be to ensure seamless healthcare services for Unalaska. Our second is our search for a new chief executive officer. The board will conduct a methodical and thorough search to identify and retain a permanent CEO who will lead IFHS with vision and integrity into the future. Our third is the IFHS expansion project. We remain committed to the ongoing expansion project and ensuring it progresses on schedule. I know that in your roles as Unalaska City Councilors, you of all people can appreciate that while leadership changes can be challenging, sometimes they are absolutely necessary. I can assure you that the IFHS board's decisions have been based on our commitment to the long-term health of the organization, to the employees who work for IFHS, and to the people that we serve. We appreciate the support of the City of Unalaska, and we have the utmost confidence in the IFHS providers, some of whom are here tonight, and all of the other staff who continue to provide excellent care to everyone who lives, works, and visits our community. So thank you. So can I have another 3 minutes if I'm talking on another organization's behalf?
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm putting on my USAVE hat now. USAVE is working with APIA and the Alaska Native Justice Center to sponsor a human trafficking workshop this Friday at the library from 6 to 8 p.m. If you'd like more information about that, please call us at 907-581-1500. We have also set a tentative date for our annual Make a Difference Dinner for Suicide Prevention Awareness. Our tentative date is Friday, September 27th. This is a really fun event with excellent food and various activities spread throughout the room. It's appropriate for people of all ages. And I think if you've never come to it before, please come and attend. You will get something out of it. And it seems to be a really popular event that people like, and it's really important that we talk about mental health issues and suicide prevention and make it okay for people to reach out for help when they need to and make sure people know about the resources that are available. On a personal note, we have set a tentative date for a celebration of life for Matt Leitner on Friday, September 13th. So we'll keep you posted about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green.
My name is Peggy McLaughlin. I'm here to deliver two very personal thank yous. The first being to the Alaska Firefighter Association, State of Alaska. This last weekend, they held the what was historically the Tundra Classic, renamed it the Kilt Classic, in honor of Campbell McLaughlin and Matt Leitner. And it was an honor to be able to play in their memory and to really recognize what those two men did for that particular event through the last 25, almost 30 years. So thank you, Alaska Firefighters Association, for doing that. Lynn and I are both very touched by that and appreciate the effort they put into that, and also the effort on our request to put forward an emphasis on heart health both Campbell and Matt, their death was brought on by vascular issues. And so I will just say it here and now, please be checked. Please see your doctor. Please monitor your blood pressure and your heart health. On another note, my second thank you. Last council meeting, the firefighters were honored for their work and the efforts that they've made in this community with the many calls. Just 2 days before that, our firefighters saved my house and my children and my pets. And their skill and their response made something we are going to be able to rebuild. And their professionalism and working with the insurance adjusters, they just really highlighted a highly professional firefighter group. And I'm very, very grateful for that. So thank you for letting me share that.
Thank you, Ms. McLeod.
Vice Mayor, I'd like to provide input as well. On Saturday, the clerk's office will have a table at Heart of the Aleutians for voter registration. So our deputy city clerk will be at the big tent, at table number 32, to help register folks who want to become registered voters. And then on August 21st, that will be the first half payment deadline for our property taxes. That's all. Thank you.
So we got election coming up, right? And
yes, it's a big election year this year. On our primary is on August 20th. Our local election is on October 1st. And our general election will be on November 5th.
Thank you. Does anyone on Zoom or on the phone wish to speak?
No, sir. No one indicated.
Hearing none, we'll go to the next item. Next is a public comment on agenda items. This is the time for the members of the public to provide information to council regarding items on the agenda if they don't want to wait until the item comes up on the regular agenda. To comment later on the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes, and council will not engage in dialogue. Does anyone present wish to speak? City clerk, is there written comment submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or on the phone wish to speak?
No written comments were submitted, and no one indicated on Zoom that they wanted to.
Okay. Guess we move to the next item. Next is a work session. May I have a motion and a second to go in a work session?
I make a motion to go into work session.
Second?
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Longo. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, we are in a work session. First on the work session is to discuss senior citizen tax refund with the city attorney Sam Severn of Manson, Casiola, and Severin. City manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So on June 25th, this council directed the city manager to bring back a review of our senior citizen sales tax refund language and code and suggest any possible changes, and also to address concerns of public comment received on June 11th. So tonight's discussion and the memo in your packet from the city attorney accomplished that objective, and we have Sam Severn on the phone tonight to present his memo and to respond to any questions you might have. So Sam, you have the floor. Take it away.
Okay, thank you. Just want to make sure I'm projecting and people can hear me.
We can hear you great. Thank you.
We can hear you good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So I was asked to look at the senior sales tax refund and what, if anything, could be done to improve upon it. The specific context was potential confusion raised with regard to the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend and how that plays into it. There was an argument that I've described, I'm sure you're all aware of, and I've tried to summarize in my memo, that certain people might be eligible for a dividend or may have passed away and their estate still be eligible for a dividend, but that they would then be ineligible for the senior tax refund, despite the tax refund ordinance referencing the dividend. I would submit, I mean, I don't believe that there is actually any confusion there. The dividend is, or excuse me, the tax refund is for natural persons. That's the very first thing it says. So an estate right off the bat would not be, just not be eligible. I think the best way to tackle this is to really just kind of put that aside. The Alaska PFD is simply used as a tool to determine citizenship, essentially. And there's very few tools. Voter registration is another one that can be used in the alternate. But it's frankly, the PFD just does not add confusion. If you squint at it long enough, maybe it does, but it just does not. So there was also an argument raised that because of the short time of residency required, that it would be pretty challenging for someone to actually in 30 days spend enough money such that a $400 refund would be really a refund as opposed to a credit. And I think that that's a fair critique. It is a policy matter of whether to call it something else or to extend the time so that it truly functions like a refund instead of a credit. As it stands right now, I don't see a legal issue with that. I think it's a fair comment and something the council may choose to address. But there's not a problem from where I sit with that. But I did stress throughout that, you know, there is a typo. There are other things that could be done to improve things from a, you know, if I spent a couple hours with it, I'm sure we could work on it and make it better. But right now it appears, my conversations with the clerk, it appears that it is, this was just modified at the beginning of last year, and it appears to be working. I specifically asked, are there any interpretation questions that we should be addressing while we're looking at it? And I don't think that there are any. That's my understanding. So there are many policy directions the council could go, making it easier, harder to apply for, making it more or less, or extending the amount of time. And I'm glad to assist with any of those. But the particular issue with the confusion around the PFD, I don't think, frankly, exists, but we could take steps to further eliminate it by saying, you know, we could put a line in that says PFD eligibility does not equate to tax refund eligibility. There is simply proof of residence. For example, if people felt there was some ambiguity, we could be more explicit about that. So that's a mouthful from me. I largely recited my memorandum, but I'm glad to, I'll take notes if people want to go study something else or take it a different direction. Glad to be of help.
Council, any question? I got one question. Did we ever look about a registered voter being a resident? I think that's more on that note, better than a PFD.
The code actually does allow that. It says applicants shall prove residency in Unalaska by providing to the city clerk evidence of either current voter registration in the state of Alaska at an address in Unalaska or evidence of approved eligibility for the Alaska PFD in the current year at an address in Unalaska.
And also at the clerk's discretion, other residency proof can be accepted.
Thank you. Question or discussion?
Vice Mayor?
Council Member Bell, and then I'll go with Council Member.
I think there's looking for a little bit of direction from council on at least what our thoughts are on this. And I'd have to say there's not really, from what I can read, there's not really a lot of ambiguity in these guidelines or this process or these rules. That being said, with any rule that we make or any governing body makes, there's always going to be some room or some, you know, way of looking at something that you might be able to interpret what it says differently. And so, in the very end, it doesn't give me a whole lot of, worry that, there may be at some point, some type of situation where it may need, input or decision by the city manager or council. I'd be more than willing to look at any potential changes that staff may, suggest in work, work with interpreting this or work through work with the city attorney. From what Sam has presented here, Mr. Severance presented here, I'd have to agree with what his take or his interpretation is on this. So just I hope that gives, staff a little bit of guidance or some idea what council's thinking. So.
Yeah, at this point, excuse me, Mr. Vice Mayor, I know Council Member Luby has a comment as well, but, we don't plan on making any changes as we don't find that they're necessary in consultation with our attorney, unless, of course, we're directed otherwise.
Council Member Luby?
Yeah, and so first off, I want to just say, thank you to Ms. McLaughlin for, bringing this to attention because of, some people interpret things one way or another. But I do have to, agree with our city attorney as well. After really looking at the code, I think a big part of it is number 4, which is pretty, self-explanatory on the resident, being a resident of the city. And, although number 5, because it is something new, it could kind of muddy the waters a little bit and you might interpret it a little bit differently. But as I read it, that's just a way to prove, it's another option to approve residency, but there's a lot more to it when you look at, remaining to stay and in the city of Unalaska and all of that. And then, the other part of it is that was kind of brought up, is it a refund for the past or for the future? And, and I kind of thought about this even when we were talking about this before, is it for the future or the past? But, as you kind of read this code, it really is for the current year because it's a yearly application. And so, if you the year that you apply for it, that would be a refund for tax already paid or tax that you're going to pay in that year. And that's how I would interpret this. I don't really feel like we really need to, change anything. If we did, I would say maybe make number 5 4A, as simple as something like that to kind of go with that. But I don't really feel like we need to change it either. And after I really looked at it, I'm like, I'm thinking it's pretty self-explanatory because there's much more to it. You can't just take one piece of it. You have to take the whole code overall. So if staff or the attorney wanted to change something, I would support it. But I think right now, as it is, I think it's fine. But again, I do want to thank Ms. McLaughlin for bringing that to our attention. I can see how it could be, misunderstood or, I'm not really misunderstood, but maybe a little bit of misunderstanding on it. So anyway, I think that it's fine the way it is. And again, thank you, Ms. McLaughlin, for bringing that to our attention to clarify for you. And I hope we did. Thank you.
Any other council member home?
Thank you. I know when this originally came forward, I think it was just the intent to kind of clean up some people that might have been applying that actually weren't residents here. And so they, we put in those additional requests for proof of local citizenship. I know that PFD doesn't particularly do that. You could apply for a PFD and you got to wait a year, and then if you're Alaska resident, even though, and so you could have moved here. So that being said, I actually, if to improve on this, and I think we always should look at our code, and if something has some ambiguity, or we want to make sure that people are getting fair treatment, that there are always ways to improve. And I think the one area that I really do want to emphasize is that is the refund. I mean, specifically, so you talk about a refund, you're referring to past purchases and tax already spent, and you're going to, as a senior citizen who's been a resident, should be allowed that refund, and it's $400, you know, for the previous year. What I would like to clean up is the 30 days prior. I think if we're really want to, and this is not meant to add any more burden to the clerk, because how do you prove, you know, when did you move here? Again, a lot of this is, you know, people just, you know, the honor system. So when you attest in your form that you were here at a certain time prior, then you're going to get that refund for that entire year based on the application. So I would like to see some clarification or some change on that, that it's not just 30 days because you could have moved in and you're getting a refund for the entire previous year. And so that is something to move forward. That is something I think that could be cleaned up a bit and be very clear that, I mean, because if you look at PFDs, you have to be here. I mean, I know we're not using those guidelines, but you have to be a year and then you can apply. So we're not asking that. We're just asking that that is just another way to prove, because if you don't register, it'd be some other way. And of course, there was the other thing, you know, or some other method that the city clerk found to be reliable source. So yeah, that's I think you can always look at these things. And I know there was a comment that it's, you know, it's pretty good and it doesn't necessarily need to be cleaned up, but I can see some room for improvement. And I think that we should move forward. So I put forward a what do you call those? Yeah, that thing. a directive to see if we can just that particular language have for discussion and see if there's something that we want to move forward with. Thank you.
So if we're going to have a directive, we're going to be in a motion in a second, so we can address and vote on it. And we can always do that towards the end or towards the end when we go to the last part of the meeting.
Yeah, you can't do that in work session.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other discussion or comments to the council? Hearing none.
Vice Mayor, we have a comment from the audience in the council chambers. I could please call on Ms. Denise Rankin.
Go ahead, Ms. Rankin.
Thank you very much. And I'm speaking as a community member for the city of Unalaska. I was on the tribal council, the Colonel Tribe of Unalaska, when we first brought this forward to the city. And the intent was to be a refund for our elders. They're on a fixed limited income. And as we all know, as we age, we have medical bills, whatever, that costs a lot of money, including supplies. What I would like to address is the natural person. I do believe that if somebody, and I'm older than Joe, so I'm looking at him, if I pass, and he can't get a refund because he's not 65. He's paid a lot of money for my medical supplies, for help at the clinic. So I think that if you could please consider doing a refund within the time frame, if the person has passed within that previous year, that would be helpful, I believe, to many of the elders or their heirs. Thank you.
I think I got you right. So if there's a couple and one pass, and whoever left behind is a lot younger, under 65, and you're trying to voice that they should be able to get a refund continuation from the husband or wife that passed that's over 65. Thank you, Ms. Rank.
Question?
Go ahead, Councilmember Coleman.
So if someone in the household has passed within the eligible year, is that sound what you're looking for?
Well, what I'm thinking about is what happened with my mother when she was taking care of my grandfather. We didn't apply for the sales tax credit for him when he passed because we didn't think that we could, but it was very expensive to take care of him for that year before he passed, and just that little bit of income would have been helpful to the survivors. And it may not be doable, it might be too complicated, but just something to look at.
I'm trying to get language for you.
Thank you.
So that if should we choose to discuss it, we can also bring that forward. So that's what I'm. So this is. So was my comment?
You were
close enough.
Yes.
To at least have a discussion.
Yes, because when, like in my mother's case, my grandfather and she were living together in the same household.
Thank you.
Any other comments or more discussion?
Yeah, Vice Mayor.
Yeah, go ahead, Councilmember Luby.
Yeah, I would be in support of looking at, you know, the possibility of, you know, adding some language about somebody, you know, somebody passes in the previous year. It is super expensive when they get to that point, if you're taking care of somebody. I also went through that with my mother-in-law, and, you know, the cost of supplies and different things to take care of an elder person, it is a lot, and you need a lot of extra stuff that you normally don't purchase. And so I would be in support of looking at, you know, maybe changing something or adding something to not only be natural persons, but some language to include somebody that had, you know, just recently passed away. I would be open for that discussion for sure.
Thank you, Councilmember Luby. So we'll have that. I guess we'll have a directive at the end, towards the end of the meeting, and we'll get a second, and we'll go from there. Thank you. Any other comments or discussion? Hearing none, we'll go to the next one. Second on the work session is the review and discuss rental market survey, city housing policy update, and proposed rent increases and potential building sites. City manager to introduce, please.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So I do have a PowerPoint presentation to kind of walk us through the discussion of several topics related to city employee housing. If you go to the next slide, please. The five general topics that we're going to discuss are the recent rent market survey that we did, and proposed rent increases in response to that, an update to our housing policy. We'll talk a little bit about our housing proprietary fund and also potential building sites. The city owns 16 apartments. We have the fourplex on Loop Road. We have the eightplex on Ptarmigan and two duplexes on Lair Road. There's a mixture of two and three bedroom units across these four facilities. Just 12 units are used for city employees, though, because four units are subleased to the school district under the terms of the grant that funded construction. That grant requirement was for 10 years, which is now expired. So the city may choose to discontinue leasing to the school district and using those four extra units for city employees. The city manager has agreed to provide the school district with at least 1 year's notice if we make that decision to no longer sublease to the school. So 12 housing units means that we have the ability to offer housing to 6 to 7% of our employees, which isn't very much. So there's, you know, while finding housing in Alaska has always been a challenge, we are seeing some emerging trends that make it even more difficult. Those trends include units that are being converted to B&B short-term rentals rather than being offered as long-term rentals. We find that some landlords only want to rent to companies or employers, not individuals. Some landlords don't want to advertise the availability of their units. We have high rent, and land to build is expensive or unavailable, and construction is expensive. These are all things that you are well aware of, but these factors reduce the already limited housing options. In fact, during the recent study, it was revealed that only one vacant unit for private rental was available, one. So the rent study that we did, the plan, as required by policy, the planning department completed a rent market study in April and May of this year. We had about a 40% response rate from local landlords, but those who did respond represent 142 individual housing units. So that's quite a few. So for purposes of this presentation, we're going to focus on the median rent for two and three bedroom family unit, multifamily units, because both with and without heat included in the rent, because that's a configuration of our city housing, two and three bedroom units. So the rent study showed that the city rents are below the market, which is not unexpected. So the study results show that, and again, we're focusing on two and three bedroom apartments, and it's up on the screen, both with and without heat. For a two bedroom unit, the median rent was $1,688 a month without heat, and $1,850 per month with heat. For the three-bedroom units, the median was $2,250, whether or not heat was supplied in the rent. So staff is recommending some rent increases for city employee housing because we're below the market. Rents were last increased at the eightplex and the fourplex in 2012. And believe it or not, rents haven't been increased at the Lear Road duplexes since 1997. So we recommend that the Lear Road duplexes be increased by $500 a month each, the fourplex increased by $225 a month, and the eightplex increased by $250 a month for both the two and three bedroom units. And the proposed rents are there in the middle column, and the total increases are on the far right. So we also recommend the total increase be spread out over 3 years to ease the financial burden on our employee tenants. So these increases will bring our rents in line with the local market. So I'm going to pause here and see if there are any questions so far. Okay, moving on. Oh, do you want?
Yeah, is everything occupied right now? All the.
There are two units being held open for recruitment purposes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Councilmember Longo.
So if you work for the city and you're eligible for this, you go in and sign up on a list you don't exactly, like, not everyone has the same chances to get into these as a transitional, right? Like, you're trying to get more employees to come out here. They have a hard time finding somewhere to live. They can't accept the job at that time because they can't. is there no places open that, okay, for 6 months we can, you know, get you in here? How does...
We have done that in the past, and which is quite difficult because at the end of the 6 months, they don't want to move. And who can blame them, right? Who likes moving? And maybe they can't find something. It's pretty easy to say, oh, you can have this for 3 months or 6 months. But if they can't find anything, you know, transitional housing, while in theory is a great idea, in practice, it's not always workable. But we have done that in the past. So the two units that we're holding open right now are for critical positions. We're trying to hire a controller and a utilities director. And we want to be able to say, we have some place for you.
Is that part of the reasoning for looking into this increased rent rate? Because at that point, if you're in there and it's a transitional thing, but rent's about the same as it would be out in town, then it's easier to use these houses or this housing.
Really, the impetus behind the rent increases, it was just to be in comparison with the market, to be at the market level and not way below. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I guess that wasn't a huge consideration when we were proposing increases. But we will cover some of the things you've brought up a little bit later here. Anything else?
Any other question?
Okay.
Go ahead. No.
All right, we'll go on to the housing policy update. So code requires the council review this periodically, and amendments are to be made by resolution. And there's, you know, the draft policy is in your packets. In addition to rent increases, there's three primary changes that we're making to the policy. We're combining a bunch of separate policies into one. We're going to discontinue the employee housing waiting list. And we would like the housing proprietary fund to be reimbursed for rents and expenses when units are held vacant. So, like I already said, code requires this periodic review by council. And the biggest change is doing away with the employee housing waiting list. Since housing is currently being used primarily for recruitment and retention purposes, existing employees may have been on the waiting list for years, which creates unrealistic expectations. Moving forward, if a unit becomes available and is not needed for recruitment, it will be advertised in-house and employees will have an opportunity to apply. The proposed policy sets out the eligibility and tenant selection criteria, which are that full-time employees in critical positions will be given priority over full-time employees in positions not considered critical, and then down to part-time employees and then less than part-time employees. So, and we also will look at family size in relation to the available unit. And if it's a family with six kids, they might not be the best suit for a two-bedroom apartment. That's what that means when I say family size. The other big change is we would like the housing proprietary fund to be reimbursed for rent, utilities, and cleaning expenses associated with holding units for recruitment or units used for interim employees. This is in order to bring revenue and consistency to the housing proprietary fund. So we have used units for, say, when we had an interim finance director or an interim police chief, and part of their contract was that they got housing at no cost. And so we put them in one of our housing units, and then there was no income, no revenue coming from that. And we just want the housing proprietary fund to be reimbursed for that. So it's actually being able to be managed in a proper way, that there's revenue coming in when the units are being used for those purposes. Any questions about the updated policy?
Councilmember Coleman.
So reimbursement of the proprietary fund, that's great. Is that coming from the department that is holding that for that position?
We tossed that around, and what we decided in discussion with the finance director, she suggested that at budget time that just be added to the housing proprietary fund budget. And then when that amount is determined for that year, that money be transferred from the general fund into the housing proprietary fund. the department doesn't necessarily have a say in when those units are held. That's a city manager decision. We thought about putting that funding in administration, and then the housing proprietary fund would be reimbursed from there. And the finance director said, there's no reason for that extra step. Just do a budget amendment to bring it to true it up. And then each year we'll just budget for that. And if it's used, it's used. And if it's not, it's not.
But I would think that if a department is short-staffed, then they would have the funding available, I would think it would come out of there because it's being held open for that staff person from that department, and then that money is not actually being used for staffing. So that's just...
Well, we don't budget in departments for housing. We just don't. That's not part of our budgeting process. Any department has an open position, they're not budgeting for housing a vacant position, housing an employee for a vacant position. That's not something that's included in our budgets.
Okay.
It's just not because it's a question. We don't pay for employee housing.
Okay.
Any other question? Council member, but I would just make a comment that if we want to true up the fund at the end of the year by doing a budget amendment, we're simply doing an end around on the budget. My vote will be no every time.
Okay. We did transfer in $300,000 in FY24 to reimburse the housing fund for those units that were held open. And so moving forward, I don't think the amount's going to be as much because, number one, we're increasing the revenue by increasing the rents. And I sure hope we fill these two positions pretty soon, and then we'll be all full up. But council did authorize $300,000 transfer into the housing proprietary fund in FY24. And right now, at the end of FY24, the draft, we got the June financials, which they're not audited yet, but it's showing $54,000, almost $55,000 in the positive. So I think moving forward, it's not going to be a huge number unless something else changes in our.
But I would say two wrongs don't make a right. We did true it up. I understand that. But if we're going to change the direction here and actually run it as a proprietary fund, then we need to do that and not just say, oh, let's make it up out of the general fund at the end of the year. That doesn't sound like, running a proprietary fund correctly. I guess that's all my comments for right now.
We just got to fill up those positions, I think, and it'll be better off for everybody.
We're working on it.
Okay. Councilmember Coleman.
So the wait list is gone.
If you had approved this new policy.
So, but you're still, by the city manager's discretion, is still going to keep some open. I guess that's... Or are they not? If there's open and you had people waiting and they're eligible, they should be able to get in instead of holding it. I guess that's a clarification on that.
Those two units being held for very specific positions that we are actively recruiting for. And I hope to fill them. If those two people find other housing and those units are not needed, then we'll offer them up. We'll just put out a message to all of our city employees and they can apply for the apartments.
So in the past, if you did hire that position and those people didn't fill that, the waiting list would never fill that housing unit then. It would just roll over into some... I was just curious how the waiting list worked. If it was being held for, a chief of a department, mm-hmm. and that person came in and they went somewhere else, that unit now gets to go to somebody else?
Yes.
As opposed to it didn't in the past?
We have filled units based on the waiting list in the past. That's not like it never happens, but we just don't want to maintain a waiting list anymore because I think it does give unrealistic expectations to employees that they might eventually get a a city apartment.
Oh, can I have a?
Okay. Councilmember Luby, you got anything to add on?
I do. I'm just kind of waiting to hear everybody. So a couple of things. So one of them is, one of my questions was with the transfer, if we were going to, you know, planning on to transfer from the general fund balance or from departmental budgets. And I know, you know, that we've been, you know, having different discussions I have with the city manager and stuff on, and I've heard other staff members, you know, that they felt like, you know, that it should come out of that department's budget. And I understand you guys talked about that and stuff. But, you know, I was just kind of thinking about it, and I feel like it should come from the department's budget that's holding it. Like, you know, so the controller one should come from the finance department. And I know you guys have never budgeted for housing before. And so, but as I'm thinking about it on an accounting aspect, I'm thinking, well, if you had the employee, then you would have wages. If you don't have the employee, now you have budgeted wages that didn't get used, which could go to the proprietary fund to make up what department that you were holding. But again, it's just still coming out of the general fund. And so it is an extra step. But I really felt that it really needed to be in the department's budget if they were going to hold it. So I'm a little bit, I don't know which way to go there on that one right now. I'm kind of have to think about it a little bit more. But part of the problem I see is even with raising the rents, and even though this is bringing them, you know, up to market based on the rental study, if you look at the policy in number one under, or I guess it's number one in general, C, where it talks about rent amounts may also be increased for administrative fees, increase in costs, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so the proprietary fund, and a lot of it has been because the rents aren't up to market, haven't been up to market, and I understand that. But even if all the units were filled at the new rent rates, it looks like you're still going to be running a deficit. It's not going to cover it, the expenses. And especially in 3 years, who knows, you know, how much are things going to go up in 3 years? And we're taking a 3-year span to get up to market, which I don't necessarily agree with either, because we just gave everybody a big raise to take care of the cost of housing out here. And we didn't spread that out over 3 years. So why would we spread this out over 3 years? It's just kind of a point that I'm making. But the biggest issue is the proprietary. If we're going to run it as a proprietary fund, it's, you know, still going to run a deficit. And so that's kind of an issue. How do we make up that cost? And I'm not talking about the cost because they're vacant. If we filled all the apartments, it looks like, you know, I took a 4-year average, it looks like we would still be, you know, running a deficit in that proprietary fund. So, and I'm sure that, you know, there's kind of, we need to kind of figure out how are we going to take care of that. So those are the two biggest things for me is the, you know, spreading it over 3 years. I feel like, you know, the employees, you know, most all the employees now over the last 3 years have gotten pretty substantial raises, and they can, you know, they could afford these rents. But I also think we might need to look at it a little differently for the amount of rent, and maybe, you know, do we spread it over 3 years? Do we keep running in, you know, a deficit? So those are just kind of some thoughts that I had up with, and I don't know if anybody else has considered those or not, but anyway, that's all that I guess I have to say right now about it.
Councilmember Coleman.
Yeah, and I guess the only really thing that kind of struck struck out at me was, 4D, the first one talking about family size, and I'm not sure if you're meeting eligibility of your employment. I'm not sure why family size would matter if you're able to meet. I'm not saying that why a one person would want to move into a three bedroom unit, but I think it introduced a kind of a prejudice there that you have to have a family in order to have a large home. And that's not necessarily the case. As long as you can afford it, I'm not too sure why it should even matter from the landlord. I can understand the maximum people. we have seen it. But the minimum, I mean, there is a C, you know, taken as a case-by-case basis, but I really don't feel like A and B are warranted other than the maximum number of people. Thank you.
Any other more discussion? Councilmember Bell?
Yeah, I'll just make a couple comments, and I'll piggyback on Councilman Coleman's comments there. I understand where you're coming with, where your opinion is coming from there. I do have to lean back towards where staff is, and since there's a limited amount of housing, is using that housing in the best manner. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put one person in a three bedroom, you know, at the Aplex there where they've got, you know, 2,500 square feet. You know, even if they can afford it, it may not necessarily be the best use of the housing assets that the city has. I would think there's more discussion there. So I'm not necessarily opposed to what your opinion, and I agree with where you're coming from on that. My other comment here was, and I did go back through and pull out the budget for last year and looked at, tried to look at some of the line items, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it just on a cursory review, it looks like there are allocations to payroll or a payroll through multiple different departments. And just getting rid of that mess would clean up at least a small portion of the costs in that, if we're going to run it like a proprietary fund. For the size of housing we have here, a property manager and maybe a secondary staff person would be the max that I would see would need to be allocated out of that fund for wages. You know, any of the repairs like that, if I'm understanding correctly, get billed to the building maintenance. So there shouldn't necessarily be a allocation for building maintenance out of there if they're billing when they're doing repairs. It's basically double billing, which, you know, makes our costs look higher in that proprietary fund. And please correct me if I misread any of that, but I did note that.
I had that same question, Councilmember Bell, so I dug into it. Right now, I think in the current FY25 budget, there are $244,000 worth of salaries allocated to the Housing Proprietary Fund, which to me sounds like a whole lot and too much. And so I am digging into that to find out why there are so high percentages of allocations budgeted to the Housing Proprietary Fund, because at first blush, it doesn't make sense to me either, but we will dig into that and look at it. I think we may be required to allocate salaries if we're running it as a proprietary fund. But right now, you know, there's salaries in administration and finance and facilities maintenance that are allocated to that. The double billing is not, or double dipping, however you refer to it, is not happening. So that there's that salary allocation is there at the first of the year in the budget. And then as those, as facilities maintenance bills for the time they spend working on the units, those amounts it's reduced by that much. So it's not being double dipped.
Okay, thank you. And I think as we have these conversations too, especially when we get into a conversation of whether the city should build more housing or acquire more housing, I think we'll end up circling back to how this whole housing
thing is going to work out in the long run. So mm-hmm. thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Councilman Bill. Any other comments or more discussion? This is a work session. Go ahead.
You can't do it from there, Debbie. You have to come up and use the microphone.
Up to the podium and introduce yourself, please.
So this is Debbie Zuger. She's our, she works in administration, and she manages our housing for us.
So I just wanted to make just one clarification that operationally, the housing budget has facilities, maintenance operations, and then administrative operations. Those two, if you don't look at the salaries, it's very close to being in the black if you look at it that way. This year, because of the $60,000 that got put into facilities maintenance portion of the budget for the roof study, it's not in the black, but it's really close. And by raising the rents, as we're proposing to raise them, it will really help. But salary, what counting the salary allocation, it won't be in the black. So I just wanted to kind of throw that in there real quick.
Thank you, Ms. Good. Any other question or comments?
Okay, we'll move on. The next slide is we're talking about the Housing Proprietary Fund next. To give you a bit of information about the Housing Proprietary Fund, historically, it has not been profitable, showing an average annual net loss for the last few years of $264,717. The primary source of revenue, of course, is rents, and two factors are negatively impacting that housing revenue, one being rents haven't been adjusted for years, and two, the fund isn't paid for rent and other expenses when a unit is being held for recruitment purposes or is being used for an interim or contract employee. And then the biggest increase in fund expenses have been increases in utilities and garbage pickup and increases in employee salaries and benefits, which are charged to the fund. And like I said already, we're presently reviewing those salary allocations to determine their accuracy and appropriateness. All right, revenue. Like I've already said, two units are presently being held for recruitment of key positions. If all units were full under the current rent structure, we'd see annual revenue of $293,760. However, the average revenue for the last 5 years has been only been a bit more than $245,000 a year. Once the new rates are fully implemented, if the Housing Proprietary Fund is reimbursed for rent and expenses related to those held units, we can expect revenue of $350,400 annually. The finance director recommends that the Housing Proprietary Fund be allocated enough additional funds from the general fund to bring the fund back into the positive, and then each year at budget time an amount be added to the fund budget to account for the units that are held for recruitment purposes or for contract or interim employees. Administration, if you all approve the policy, we would bring a budget amendment sometime before the end of this fiscal year for additional funding to true it up if needed. In future years, the plan would be that funding would be requested during the annual operating budget preparation. So before we go on to the next section, is there any other questions or discussion?
Question? Councilmember Coleman?
So one more. I'm just going to circle back to this payout to the general fund while you're holding a house. So I'm going to get away from the holding a house for a department that's an open position. But say you have somebody that's contract, and sometimes they're long-term and they're staying in housing. Wouldn't it then be part of your contract that you're getting housing, so therefore that money, the housing portion, that should be coming out of that particular department because it's part of the contract, right? That kind of makes sense to me because it's part of a contract, and even though it's specifically, it's a benefit, just like that department would pay Well, they don't. I guess they don't really pay. They, you know, a salary and the benefits that go with that.
So what that would require, I'm guessing, is going to be a budget amendment to increase the budget for that department. And then that budget would be transferred to the Housing Proprietary Fund.
But I still think it's important that it reflects the departments and their need and where they're spending the money. So my, yeah. Thank you.
Any other question? Go ahead.
Yeah, Vice Mayor.
Councilmember Luby, go ahead.
Yeah, so and I kind of agree with Councilman Coleman that somehow it does need to reflect the departmental budget. And, you know, so that's, you know, where I was kind of trying to go with. I feel like it does need to come out of their budget. It just kind of helps, you know, look at the budget overall and see where is that coming from, you know, or, you know, what department is, you know, needs to spend money for what, and especially if it's contractors, because that is part of their contract. But, and even if you're holding a position, you know, for a specific department, you know, I feel like it should be reflected that that is coming out of their department budget. It just kind of helps to see, you know, where everything is financially with each individual department. So I kind of agree there, and I'd like to kind of see it come out of the department's budget versus just a general, you know, out of the general fund, because if it just comes out of the general fund balance, it's not really being budgeted year to year. It's coming out of our any, you know, kind of excess that we have. It's our reserves. And so I think it just needs to basically come out of the department budget. I would have to agree with that one. Thanks.
Any other question? Then move forward.
All righty. Well, next is potential building sites. That's our last topic for our discussion. So the city, I just want to talk a little bit about the city receiving benefits from offering employee housing. These benefits include improved employee retention, increased productivity, and the ability to attract talent to our remote and high-cost area. It's difficult to secure housing before moving to the island, and we've lost prospective employees due to their inability to find housing. The planning department personnel examined several parcels of land owned by the city that may be suitable for such a purpose. Included in your packet is a list of 10 city-owned sites that may be appropriate to building new housing, listed in rough descending order of suitability and ease of development. The city owns several large lots, for example, on Lair Road near its existing housing on Lair and up behind Public Works. These parcels are near existing utilities, would require minimal site work, and are zoned high-density residential. These parcels could accommodate a large number of units. Numerous other properties owned by the city could be developed for housing if desired. So we're just going to look at two tonight. The first one is Upper Lair Road. So to orient you, in the upper left-hand corner, that's a big lot behind the Public Works Department. So this is up above Public Works and above Lair Road housing. So this first one, we're calling it Upper Lair Road. And the pros of this area are these three lots. Are the total area is 113,043 square feet, has an existing 40,000 square foot pad, 46 units by right across the three parcels. It's zoned high density residential already. There's existing utilities in Lair Road, and minimal site work would be needed. The cons of this site, there's elevation changes of approximately 30 to 40 feet across the lot, and a plat would need to be done to combine the parcels to maximize for a total of 53 units by right. I will say that if you're not familiar with this area, let's see if I can get this pointer. So this is pretty flat right here, but this area is a pretty steep elevation change going down to here. So really, you can't use the entire thing from here to here without a lot of dirt work, because there's right here is an elevation change that goes all along right here. So if we go to the next slide, it's, we're calling it Lower Lear Road, and you'll notice that same little loop-de-loo right there. So right here is one of the Lear Road duplexes. And then over here, this is the public works facility here. So this unit, this these three lots, there's this big lot here. And then this is the, this lot was portrayed in the prior slide for Upper Lear Road. So this is pretty flat right here. It's a big flat parcel already. Has a total area of 91,380 square feet. The existing pad is 25,338 square feet, 43 units by right across the three parcels. Again, zoned high density residential, existing utilities in Lear Road, and minimal site work is needed. Access to this would be, you know, right in front of the this is one of our existing housing units, so the access would be across that and in this way. And then again, we'd need a plat to combine the parcels. So if you want to go to, I just thought I'd look at those first two on the potential building sites, because we didn't really need to review all 10. They're in your packet if you want the information for that. And then to wrap this up, the recommendations of our staff, from staff, is that you adopt Resolution 2024-35 approving the new housing policy and adjusting rents, and then provide direction regarding potential additional housing units. It would be beneficial to have additional city employee housing for several reasons. Recruitment of new employees, retention of existing employees, units to use for interim and contract employees. And we're looking to revamp our electric line division and may move away from those services being provided by contract. And right now, the people that are working for the contractor are on a rotational program, and that was the only way they could get folks to come here to do our alignment services. So I'm thinking that might have to be part of that program. And finally, we are also beginning to analyze rotational shifts for our police officers. Just about every inquiry we've received from potential police officer applicants, they've asked, do you have a rotational schedule where they would be here for a period of time and then off and away for a period of time and go back and forth? We're having our human resources consultant look at that right now to let us know if it's even viable. And if yes, you know, all the considerations at the police department operationally and what it would cost, because it's not going to come cheap if that's the way we end up having to go. And I'm not sure it's going to work for us, but it's incumbent upon us to look and see if it would work. So we're finding that fewer and fewer prospective employees are looking to make a big move to a remote island too. We're over the years, we've just seen a decrease in the number of applicants for jobs. And I don't know all of the reasons behind that. I can, you know, we can all guess at it. But it just appears that people are less and less willing to come to a remote island with all of the challenges of living here. But overcoming the hurdle of housing would be a great step in the right direction. And in light of the significant cost of constructing new housing, I lost my notes on this, but when we constructed the 8-plex in 2010, 2011, it cost $4.6 million on land that we already owned. And in contrast, there's, you know, a 10-unit apartment building here that's for sale for $2.4 million. So I would just, what makes more sense, you know, to buy 10 units that are already existing and ready to go and we could put people in them immediately, or try to build housing that, you know, 12 years ago cost $4.6 million for 8 units. So that's a consideration you'd have to look at too. So.
Discussion? Member Bell.
My first thought is, we keep going back to this 8-plex and how much it costs. I think we learned our lesson from that. and that should not be used as a yardstick as to what future building is going to cost. I will say of all the property that is presented here, that Lear Road just makes the most amount of sense. And I think it's an important recruiting tool for the city in the future to be able to provide housing to the best ability that we can. And as a side note, I'm going to get off subject here, but all this property that's above, you know, the senior center and up on that hill, I think that would make great residential for future housing. So thank you.
Councilmember Coleman.
Just FYI, Upper Lear Road, when I worked for roads, a lot of muck was pushed in there. I suggest you talk to the roads chief before you can consider building on that. That is not probably stable.
The upper unit?
Thank you for that. It's great for a parking lot.
Okay, thanks.
But just like the area right over here, if it wasn't, there's a lot of mud pushed in there. And secondly, before I even consider even housing, I would actually like to see some real data on interviews, or it all seems to be anecdotal. Well, what if this and that? I mean, if it's out there, if we did exit interviews or we did interview, you know, talk to people, is any of that written down? Hey, we interviewed for this position this many times and this many times they said it's because of housing. I would like to see, before I even move anywhere into housing, something concrete. And unfortunately, it probably was never taken down, but it probably should, because instead of it just being a feeling, if we're going to move forward, I'd like to see something substantial and statistically validating us moving in that direction.
Any other council member Longo?
I don't know that I support any additional housing units. I think that steps on the toes of community members that do that as, you know, they're living, or they have investment properties and they have rentals and stuff, and you're taking potential customers away from those residents that are doing that.
Other question?
Vice Mayor?
Council Member Luby?
Yeah, so I think it's a great idea to, you know, to have housing available for employees. It is tough here, you know, when you're trying to hire employees or even keep employees, because housing is, you know, a problem. But with that said, I don't necessarily think that the city needs to build housing. I don't know that we need any more infrastructure to, you know, maintain. It just gets super expensive. But what I, you know, what I would propose, and I'm kind of with Councilman Longo there, there are people out there, and I know we've talked about this before, you know, and a lot of people have never stepped up to the plate, but a question would be, how many units do we think we need? And could we put an RFP out there, you know, to rent from the private sector? The city could rent those. A lot of businesses rent people's, you know, units that are available. And maybe that's a more viable way for us to go. With that, we don't have to, you know, maintain them. So that cuts the cost. The only problem we might have is if we don't have somebody to fill it, then we have to, pay that rent. But I think it would, you know, lower a lot of our costs by trying to do that. There is vacant land that people could build. We have a 23 lot subdivision that just finished. Possibly they would be willing to build stuff for the city. And if they did that, that would increase our tax revenues. We would receive, you know, the sales tax on the rental itself. Well, I guess we wouldn't if the city's renting it, because the city doesn't charge the sales tax, but we would receive property taxes from those landowners, and it would improve their property. So, you know, it would actually bring more money into the city. But there's also, you know, rentals out there. You have businesses that are more willing to rent to a business versus personal. Well, the city is a business, and I would bet you that there are landowners out there that would rent to the city. And so that might be a different option versus, acquiring it ourselves and competing with them. So I would be more interested in looking at that. I'm losing my train of thought. Sorry. If we were to build, that would cost us way too much money, I believe. So if we were going to acquire it ourselves, I would look at maybe more buying, but I don't believe the 10-plex that you're talking about is what we really need, because the other thing is what type of apartments or what type of housing do we need? Do we need more one bedrooms? I believe this whole town needs more one bedrooms because we have a lot of single people here. And I believe the city probably needs some more one bedroom apartments so that it could lower their rental costs to the employee as well. And so maybe we need to look at maybe sending out RFPs, putting out an RFP for, the city wants this many apartments or this many units, whether it's a house or apartment or whatever, and see what kind of response we get back before we go investing in more infrastructure that the city has to maintain. And that I would probably be in favor of, but right now we can't even really manage our proprietary fund, and break even. So I don't think it's a good idea to look at, adding more to it until we can at least get that, look at different options and try to figure out how to run it, at least balance the budget on the proprietary fund. So that's about all I guess I've got to say. Thanks.
So just to be clear, the city is not into competing with the industries on any rental. The proposal is for to attract recruitment and retention is what. But at the same time, I want to see some data that people are not be able to move in or being moving out because of less housing. I for some reason lately I see that housing needed is not as bad as it was 10 years ago. We see more people selling houses and open for rent advertised when you look at it. So I think a little bit of study on how we are as a community on the housing problem. A little bit more data, I guess, to be put in there to be able to support this this resolution. It'll be helpful for everybody. Council member.
I would agree if we're going to move forward on looking at building more housing or creating more housing, city employee housing, that we should probably. There needs to be a little bit more research or data or something a little more concrete that we can say, hey, yeah, this is why. But to address, some of the other issues as far as the city leasing any other kind of property as rental, I can't tell you how strongly I am opposed to that. There's a reason why the city divested from all the lease properties that we had 10 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever it was. It's just a headache and it's a liability issue. And there's, we could go on and on, the reasons why it was a bad idea. The other issue that I would bring up is, I think it was 10 or 11 years ago, this issue was brought up again. And we had a bunch of people from the community come in here and get a lot of public comment, that, hey, the city shouldn't be in housing and that, the market will take care of it. And now we have 10 years of, experience to look back on, and yes, there has been quite a bit of construction in the city, but we've seen a trend where a lot of that housing has gone to either companies, it's become company housing, or We're starting to see a rise in Airbnb type housing where, you know, it's just short term housing. And those take away from the residential market. There's probably some data out there, but I don't see that we've necessarily, this city has made a net gain in residential housing in the last 10 years. And if they have, it's not a significant number. Housing is still the same issue that it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And at some point, I'm sure we'll get a little better handle on this. But in the short term, or even in the, you know, the next decade or so, the city's needs are, it's some type of housing, whether it's for rotational people, single bedroom, one bedroom housing, has the potential to attract some of the youth back into this community, because now you've got some affordable housing that they can come back to and take these city jobs that are open, or the other jobs that are in the community. There's a whole host of benefits that I could see, and that would be all part of some data that we may look at to determine what, if and when we build, or somehow we, the city gets more employee housing. So, thank you.
Any other? That's good. Is there any more?
Vice Mayor.
Council Member Luby.
Yeah. Do we know how many units that we would be looking at that we would want to try to acquire, or, you know, either build, or how much would we be looking to have? I saw some of the stuff was 53 units on some of these lots that the city does. Is that how many we're looking to acquire, or do we have a number?
I don't really have a solid number for you, no. If we went to a rotational schedule for police, we would at the very least have to double the amount of officers, so that we're talking an additional 9 or 10 officers.
Would they share those apartments if they were in and out, or we would have they would each have their own and it would be vacant while they were gone?
To be determined.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Sounds. I'd be interested to hear what some of the problems were in the past. So I'm sure that we'll have more discussion.
Do you mean problems in the past when the city was leasing apartments to sublease?
Yes. Yes.
Tenant employees.
Yes, that's what I meant. Sorry. Yes, where the city was leasing apartments. So I would, you know, like to hear more about that. So.
Well, I know one of the issues was. That we were unable, so that one unit was damaged substantially, and the city ended up paying for that. The tenant didn't. You know, just you're working as an intermediary between a private landlord and your employee, and the city, if there's any problems, it's the city that's leasing the property, and so it ends up on us. And getting
for the
tenant to comply isn't always possible. I'm sure there's lots of stories that we could regale you with on that, but it did not turn out to be a good thing at all. It was just fraught with problems. Okay. Mentioned the 23 units out in the valley on the middle. Those are maximum duplex. You can't put a multifamily higher than a duplex on those, just FYI. Just wanted to throw that out there.
The lots that are out, the new lots that are out there.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No. That's good information to have. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Councilmember Luby. Anybody else? All the presentation?
That was the end of my presentation.
Thank you. I think that's the end of our work session. I request a motion and a second to return into a regular session.
Make a motion to return to a regular session.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Bell, seconded by Councilman Longo. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, we are back in a regular session. So, person wishing to speak on regular agenda items must sign up with the city clerk. 3-minute time limit per person. First, review a liquor license renewal. Alaska Ship Supply and Norwegian Rod Saloon. Council, the local governing body, is given the opportunity to object to the application for liquor licenses. Staff recommend no objection. Does anyone wish to make a motion? Hearing no motion, we will move to the next item. Resolution 2024-35, amending the city housing policy and rents. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-35?
Move to adopt Resolution 2024-35.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Bell. Introduced by City Manager, please.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So we just got to talking about this. So Resolution 35 will adopt the proposed city housing policy, and that will adjust rents, as we discussed, and eliminate the housing waiting list, and adds a policy for the housing proprietary fund to be reimbursed by the general fund for rent and expenses for units held open for recruitment purposes or units used to house contract and interim employees. Staff recommends adoption.
Additional discussion? No? Oh, Member Bell.
I just hope we in the future would keep up on these housing and rental studies so that we don't have this long period between rent studies.
Agreed.
I think this is a step forward to cleaning up a lot of process and language here, so I will support this resolution. And any talk of what we're going to do with housing in the future or proprietary funds, we can also have those conversations down the road, especially when we do budgets. So thank you.
Anyone else? Hearing none, City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor, we have Ms. Denise Rankin.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Denise Rankin, President for the Unalashka Corporation. And I want to thank some of the council members for bringing up the fact that there are private entities that would love to rent to the city. I wanted to give a success story because you've heard some of the downfalls. One of the success stories is the Borka apartment units that OC owns. They were built in the early 90s, maybe late 80s. And the reason they were able to be constructed is because the city of Unalaska did a 10-year lease agreement with the Unalaska Corporation for a portion of those units. And then the rest, we were able to build and lease out to other individuals. So it not only provided housing to the city, but it also brought additional housing to the community. And after the 10-year lease was up, the individuals that were in there were able to lease themselves. So it just gave a private entity enough funding and reassurance that they would be able to construct housing and know that they would be getting rent for at least a portion of it, and it made it worth the effort to build something when there is always this concern of, if we build it, is there going to be somebody that wants to rent it? The other success was that many of the city employees that first moved in there, they were all young. They probably wouldn't have been able to rent something on their own, just going out themselves. And by the time they were able to rent it after the 10 years, they had proven that they could rent and pay their rent, and we were able to continue renting to them. So I just wanted to share a success story. There are entities that would love to do something like that in the future that would also provide additional housing on top of what they would build for the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Anybody else? Once again, I'll restate the motion, Resolution 2024-35, amending the city housing policy and adjusting rents. Madam Clerk, can I get a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0. Resolution 2024-35 is adopted. Next is the directive to city manager. There are any directives? I need it in motion and a second and a roll call vote. Council Member Coleman?
I move to direct city manager to amend UCO 6.40.050 to extend the time needed to establish residency prior to the application period and to include conditions if someone in the household has deceased within the eligible year.
Second.
We got Councilman Coleman and seconded by Councilman Longo. Can you speak on your motion, please?
Yes, thank you. So I think we discussed this in the work session. I just felt like these were two aspects that could be improved upon. Again, this is just a motion to bring it forward for discussion so that they can research. And I did make the comment to extend the time needing. I'm not sure if you were looking for something more specific, but it's going to be longer than the 30-day period that is now required. So I don't know if you need some clarification on that, but or any other aspect of this, but I think this is just something that was brought up. See if this is doable and workable within the code that we have, and something that will work for our seniors.
Any other discussion or comments? Can you please state your directive again, Councilmember Kong?
To amend the code to extend the time needed to establish residency prior to the application period and to include conditions if someone in the household is deceased within the eligible year.
Madam Clerk, can I get a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Vice Mayor, could I comment?
Yes, I'm sorry. City Manager, please.
That's all right. Thank you. I don't think we need to set tonight what that residency time requirement is going to be. You know, we can discuss that in the future, but we'll have to put a lot of thought to how that's, how that's going to be proven. It's, hard enough to prove residency sometimes right now, and now we're going to ask people to prove it a year ago. So I might not be as, I don't know. We'll just really have to do some creative. We'll have to do some research and talk with the city attorney and figure out how to word that properly so it's not creating more problems than you hope to fix. And as far as including conditions to allow a deceased person to receive the refund, I can see all kinds of issues with that. Does the person applying have to have lived with the deceased, or can they just be related to the deceased? Is it the estate that has to apply, a legal entity, or is it just an individual applying on behalf of a deceased person? What if three different children of a deceased person apply? Who gets the money? What if children of a deceased person who don't live here apply? The deceased person may have lived here, but maybe the family that's applying doesn't live here. I I can just see all kinds of different little things that would make that incredibly difficult to administer. But I'm not saying that I'm not willing to look at it, but at first blush, I can see all kinds of difficulties in administering such language. But we'll definitely look at it, but I don't think it's going to be super easy, especially the second part. Does it have to be a legal entity, a state? That's one issue. But
I think
just comments.
More comments on this one. Councilmember Bell?
Yeah, I'll support the directive, even if the recommendation comes back from staff that this is way too cumbersome and to leave the language where it's at. But I think it does merit another look. And so I'll support this directive.
I'll support it too, just to get and make sure we get involve the city attorney on it and probably provide more information when it come back. It's pretty much needed more information on it. So any other Councilmember Luby?
Yeah, no, I'll support the directive. I think it's always important to take another look at things if, you know, to see if we can improve things. So I'll support it. Thank you.
Anybody else? City Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Yes, sir. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes. Motion, the directive passes 6-0. Next is our community input and announcement. This is a final opportunity for to provide information to council or to make announcement. 3 minutes time limit, please, per person. City Clerk, were written comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or phone wish to speak?
No, sir, no written comments submitted, nor does any participant in Zoom indicated that they wanted to provide any.
In that case, we need I need a motion and a second to go into our executive session.
I move to adjourn into executive session to discuss personnel and financial matters related to the PSEA contract negotiation, which, if discussed in public, might negatively impact the interests of the city.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Coleman and seconded by Councilmember Bell at 7:48 p.m.